Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio's fourth Wednesday Tucson Sisters in Crime show. We're very excited. You know, we love this because Tucson Sisters in Crime is part of the international chapter, Sisters in Crime. And it's all about mystery writing, crime fiction, you name it. And it's for authors, writers, and everybody involved in mystery and crime and all that good stuff. And also for readers of all of those genres. And it's really cool because Tucson is a fascinating place. Tucson is in Southern Arizona. It's our hometown where our storage unit is, right, Nancy? And our friends, we've got good friends over there. They're like family to us. But it is, you know, home over there, but it is home to over a million people. And when you go there, it doesn't really feel like that.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, and it really has a thriving art scene, which includes writers. It's home to that wonderful book expo that happens every year. Hopefully next year, 2022, it'll be back. But everyone, you can check out TucsonSistersInCrime.org. Today, we're very excited to welcome Elise M. Stone. Now, she's based out of Tucson, but she's been around New England. She's been in New York. I think she was born in New York. She went to college in Michigan. So she's been around too. So welcome, Elise. How are you?
I'm good today.
Good.
Good to have you on the show because you've traveled a little bit and I was reading your bio on your website and everyone, it's Elise M. as in Mary Stone. I don't know what your middle name is, but Elise M.
Close.
Stone. Close?
Marie.
Marie. Marie. All right. We're close. Elise M. Stone. And don't put the dot in there. Elise M. Stone.com. Go to her website and you're writing a series of mysteries, but Tucson, I wanted to ask you, how did you discover Tucson and decide to move there after shoveling snow in the Midwest and back east?
Well, actually, I was working in Boston, and the company I worked for got acquired. And since I was a programmer in the IT department, it was one of the ones that was considered non-essential since the acquiring company had had their own IT department, of course. And at that time, my son and his family were living in the Phoenix area. So after about 3 or 4 months of trying to find another job in Boston where I wasn't successful, I said, well, I was going to go out to Arizona anyway. So let me go look for jobs there. And it just so happened that the job I found was in Tucson. And I discovered I liked Tucson a whole lot better than Phoenix anyway. So I've just stayed here.
That's it. Well, it is so diverse, you know, just even the nature, the mountains, and we love Tucson. It's
yes.
Just a
beautiful.
There's no place like Tucson. There really isn't.
So I also love it. I particularly love the cowboys and the rodeo.
Ah, there it is.
Oh,
yeah.
She likes cowboys.
Oh, she's into the cowboys. Now, do they ever get into your books? Any cowboy? Do cowboys ever get into your books?
Not in anything published so far. I have a draft of a Western novel that one day I'll get back to when I'm ready to do that kind of genre.
I was reading your blog this morning and reading about how do you time everything when everybody's reading, is it the African Violet? You've got one story series of that and it's like, they want this. And then it's like, no, but I got to finish this. Yeah, how do you balance your time? You've got a lot of books that you've written.
I'm trying to work on that because actually I had wrapped up the African Violet Club mysteries at 6 books. So I could move on to the historical series. And I think I mentioned in the blog, I actually just decided to run a special on the first book of the African Violet Mysteries. And it suddenly took off and became very popular again. And people seem to enjoy the characters. It's a senior sleuth mystery on a retirement home in Southern Arizona. So it's they very much like having the setting and the characters in the retirement home. But I didn't think I had any more to say about it. So it's only recently that I've decided, well, I think I'm going to do sort of a spin-off series. I've got an idea for how things should develop from here. But right now, as a matter of fact, yesterday I spent trying to plan out the rest of the year so I could get at least one more book in the historical series and begin a new series with those characters. But it's not easy.
Are you writing more than one book at a time then?
I can't do more than one at a time because my brain gets totally immersed in the world I'm writing in. So plan is to switch off between them.
That makes sense to me because I was thinking, how in the world can you, I would mess everything up. I know I would. I'd have one character pop over to a new series like, hi, I'm here now.
It's a crossover event.
And seeing as they take place not over, you know, something like 2,000 miles apart, but 100 years apart, that might be a problem, you know?
A time machine.
Yes. So tell us about my first thing that I got excited about, and I want to read your work because you have the Shipwreck Point mysteries, and Nancy and I both have a thing about shipwrecks, Nancy especially, yes, because she's into the pirate thing of shipwrecks, because I don't know what you are about the pirates. Pirates and dinosaurs you have, Nancy. But yeah, tell us about this. So this is based in New England?
It is, actually. And it is partly based on a town I actually lived in for a year outside of Boston. And it's a town that has a very interesting history. And while I was living there, I just enjoyed learning about that. And I bought three or four books written by an amateur historian on the history of the town. And I always said, someday I'm going to have to write a book using this as a background for the stories. So when I stopped writing the African Violet Club mysteries, that's the one that came to mind to start next.
Oh, wow. Cool. So this one that you have up, the Case of the Mysterious Madam. Now that, you know, who doesn't want to read that?
Yeah, really.
That's a heck of a title. The Mysterious Madam. I mean, come on, you think about it. So that is out now. That's your latest one, right, for everyone to get?
Actually, this is the Case of the Mysterious Madam is the first book in the series.
Okay.
There are right now 5 books in the series.
Wow.
Okay. So what's the newest one for everyone to know?
The newest one is the Case of the Troubled Tycoon.
Oh, hello. Welcome to Wall Street.
Okay. Listen, so can you give us all a lesson on titles? Because I think that's one of the hardest things, even for writers doing short stories or articles, like even, you know, as travel writers, we're all like, okay, what, you know, but you're good at the titling, man. Yeah. This is fantastic.
I take no credit for it whatsoever. I learned a lesson from Earl Stanley Gardner and all of the Perry Mason mysteries, which were the case of, and then an alliterative adjective noun. And so I went down the same route.
Followed by ta-da.
So when people read the Shipwreck mystery series, do they need to start at the very first one? Do they start with the madam, or can they start with a tycoon and then meet the madam?
Ooh.
It's really preferable to start from the beginning.
Okay.
I try to write subsequent books, particularly with the Troubled Tycoon, to have enough of the backstory woven into the current story that people can follow things. But I'm definitely one who does character development in the stories. Mm. And my lead characters in particular are undergoing quite a bit of change as things develop.
So are there any historically correct or real madams? I mean, like, that have real names that you can research. Like, did people really write about madams that really existed? That
to some degree, the town's red light district was researched quite a bit. I don't remember any particular names given as far as the prostitutes in the town. But I do have names for the boss, if you will, the political boss of the town, and the way that was organized, and the there's no other way to say it, the corruption of the police department and and all those other events. And
this is getting juicier by the minute here.
I know.
We got Maddox, you know, the red light police district, corruption, politicians. Like, this is getting really good.
I told you, I had to take that background and use it somewhere because it's just, you wouldn't believe it, you know, unless you actually knew it was true.
Wow.
And so the shipwreck, is this an area where there was a lot of shipwrecks? Because I know there you've got a lighthouse up there. And now we just had a conversation about wanting to live in a lighthouse for like a couple months to see what it's like.
Well, actually, this is kind of off topic, but not exactly. But actually, there's a lighthouse on the South Shore of Massachusetts, the Scituate Lighthouse, where actually there is a keeper's cottage that a regular person, since a lighthouse is basically decommissioned, but it is rented out to just a person. I think there's a waiting list to get that cottage, but it's possible to do that on occasion.
So somebody will murder the person who's there now so they could be next.
You never know.
See, that's it, yeah.
But to answer your question, yes, there were quite a lot of shipwrecks in Boston Harbor. In fact, on my wall, I have a map of all the shipwrecks in Boston Harbor and off the coast of the real town. As a matter of fact, during a storm, the hull of one boat washed up onto the beach and sat there for a couple of years. So.
Ooh, ooh, neat.
Wow.
But there's, you know, you'll always wonder if there's booty under there.
Yeah.
Not that kind of booty, but that kind of booty.
Yeah.
You know, you want to know, like, is there going to be a treasure chest? Or, you know, do people, I mean, it looks really cold and rocky. We haven't been there yet, but from some of the travel writers that have been there in our magazine and interviews, it sounds like you don't want to just, you know, go in for like a regular swim to find stuff around a shipwreck. Was the rocks and all of that?
It depends upon what part of the coast you're
okay.
on.
Okay, cool. So you've got the shipwrecks. So that's so what's that's next? Cool. What are you writing now with all these different series? Because you also do, you know, some other short stories that I was seeing. So you've got the Community of Faith Mysteries. But I have to go back to the African Violet Club. Where did the African Violet come from for you?
Well, for me, I wanted to write a cozy series, which usually involves either some kind of a shop, a restaurant, or a hobby. And it just so happened shortly after I moved to Tucson, I had always grown African violets, and I saw there was a chapter of the African Violet Society of America that met in Tucson. And I decided, well, I should go to this and find out more about it. And for me, it had always been just African violets are relatively easy to grow and they're pretty and they, you know, they have blooms. But maybe I could learn something. Mm. And I found out these people, it wasn't a hobby, it was an obsession. Mm. I said, okay, this gives me motive.
Yeah, ooh. I would people get that. Yeah, that's always good. So you are always people watching then, huh?
Of course.
Yes. And then getting involved. If you're getting involved, you're getting really good scoop then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's so wow. When you go to your Tucson Sisters in Crime meetings, and I know men are also welcome to these meetings, and I know you've done a lot more Zoom and everything this pandemic year, but that's got to be fascinating too, because you can get into the nitty-gritty with, you know, the different speakers and learning, you know, about ammunition and guns. And, you know, do you enjoy going to those kind of events to get that kind of information?
Absolutely. I have belonged to Sisters in Crime for close to 20 years, I guess. When I was living in the Boston area, I was a member of the New England chapter. And there was no Tucson Sisters in Crime chapter when I moved here. They had tried to do one in a town south of here. It's in Sierra Vista, since you're familiar with the area. Mm-hmm. But that just didn't have enough people. It was too long a trip for people from Tucson to go for a meeting. So I was thrilled when there was, I don't remember even where I heard the announcement that there was going to be a preliminary meeting at Clues Unlimited, which was the mystery bookstore in Tucson, to see about forming a Tucson chapter. So I joined from day one because I do love the whole combination of talking about writing and craft with my fellow writers, plus having speakers who will go into different aspects of crime and investigation and
cool.
All the things you need to know to write mysteries.
Wow, cool.
You know, and also for readers, you know, they talk about that it's for everybody that's interested in mystery and crime. So that's kind of neat too, because there's a connection, I know, especially with the Books Expo that happens, the book festival every year, that you get to connect with the readers.
Oh, absolutely. And I was so disappointing when the Tucson Festival of Books was canceled this year and turned into virtual. Actually, I think it was canceled last year and turned into virtual this year. Yeah. Because I'm really an introvert, but by being in the Tucson Sisters in Crime booth there with other members of the chapter and everybody's books and seeing people walk by and just talking about mysteries and writing mysteries is just so enjoyable.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, there's Tucson's, you know, home to a lot of writers. I mean, Southern Arizona, like I was saying, it's a big art community, music community. Tucson rocks, man. Every time we do these episodes, I'm like, I'm getting homesick.
A little homesick.
And right now it's monsoon season. Well, today when we're recording this, we're in Prescott, Arizona, so we're not so far away, but we have like the beginnings of a monsoon storm coming, and I'm like, come on, do it. I miss it. But well, I don't think it's going to happen. I hope we get rain.
I was just watching the weather report at noon. And it's still south and east of Tucson, but expected storms in tonight around midnight. So,
We love it. Yeah, see, that's the sky drama, you know, that you get over there. Yeah. So, now, are you ever going to do a mystery series? Well, the African Violet Club. So that was based in Arizona.
Yes.
Okay, so that's good. Yeah.
I had to set it outside the city in order to give it somewhat of a small town feel. So I made up a town. But it is definitely in Southern Arizona.
So what are you working on next?
Right now, I'm trying to write a short story for an anthology that's looking for submissions. So that's the first thing I'm working on, and that will be related to the historical series. And then I read an interesting technique for managing more than one series recently, which is to outline the next book in the series you just released a book in before writing a book in the other series. So when you come back to it, the outline is all ready to go and you don't have so much work to do to get back into the world and know what's going to happen in the story. So after that, now, don't get too excited. All I know about this next Shipwreck Point mystery is that pirates are in the title.
Yay! Yay, we like that. Okay, we want to go to
I'm picking up on the shipwreck theme again after a little diversion into some other aspects of the town. Okay,
and following treasure.
Following that is I'm going to write a transition story between the original African Violet Club mysteries and what I'm thinking of as the Return to Rainbow Ranch mysteries, so that there's pulling it together with what happened since the last book there ended and this new series begins. Because again, with my cowboy thing, I've decided to move my main characters to a dude ranch. So I'm just looking forward to doing something with that, giving it a little bit of a different feel to it and the opportunity to introduce some new characters.
Nice.
So we recently did an interview with the writer and it circled around Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. That's the greatest British detective. So when you look at the States, I thought, okay, well, who's the greatest American detective? And I really was surprised at what collectively the internet said,
So I want to ask you, who do you think is America's greatest detective?
Oh, don't ask. It is so hard.
Yeah.
I can tell you what the internet says if you want to know.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't say any of my choices.
Well, their choice.
I'm thinking, my first thing went to Ellery Queen, who is another one of my favorites.
Oh, but that's old. Yeah.
But more modern, I would think Walt Longmire. So,
okay, well, now they're telling me that Columbo is it. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
I like Columbo, but I don't know about the best detective.
I know. And it was that or Dick Tracy. And I'm like,
no.
Come on. No. Oh, but you're right, Ellery Queen. But that's older.
There's also Robert B. Parker Spencer is a favorite of mine.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know Spencer?
No.
Spencer for Hire?
No, that's Magnum or whatever.
No, but there's a Spencer. Isn't what? That, wait a minute. Is he the one with the dark hair?
Good, Lisa.
I don't know. I went into TV mode.
I don't know. I think it was Robert Urich who played Spencer.
Yes, that's exactly. Oh, yeah, Robert Urich. That's, yeah, you got it right.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh,
but you have to remember, I spent 8 years in the Boston area, and I saw Robert B. Parker at the bookstores on new book releases several times. And I really think Spencer is a terrific detective.
So there we go. All right. Well, someone needs to go and update the Wikipedia page.
Well, somebody needs to make some new television detective stuff, because really.
Oh, come on. You got to do it on your blog. So that's it. Just blog entry. No, but I think it's interesting. And what about women investigators? I mean, that's sometimes left out.
I was just going to say, first, I must be reading your mind because I was going right to Jessica Fletcher. So
see, right there.
Yeah.
Angela Lansbury. And
and
you've got to think all of Agatha Christie's stuff, what she's done. Mm-hmm. But women get left out of, Agatha being the writer, obviously, but women getting left out of the investigative side of things. So I want to see more women. You know, but I'm just saying, it's all about sisters in crime here, okay?
Exactly.
So we got to have that. But I wanted to ask too, but what led you to pick up pen and paper and go into the mystery genre? Is that something you were always into? Did you read Nancy Drew? And
yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm all flashing things around my head here.
The Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I always wanted to be a writer, but I kind of got discouraged from pursuing that early on before I went to college.
Oh.
Probably because it's not a very reliable income. Mm-hmm. So you really have to do something else until you can actually earn money at it. But, excuse me. I decided... it's almost 20 years ago, that I wanted to write a novel, before my life was over. I mean, that sounds really depressing, but I wasn't thinking of that. But I was just thinking, yes, I was getting older, and I wanted to do some of the things that I always dreamed of, and one of those was being a novelist. So I sat down, and I hadn't written in forever, probably since I graduated from high school. So I just had no idea where to approach it. And the advice at the time was to write what you read. Well, I read mysteries. I always read mysteries. I mean, I'm a book addict. I've always read a lot. So that's what decided me to go for mysteries. And I knew I couldn't write police procedurals or anything requiring, technical expertise. But cozies, I figured I could do.
So how do you enjoy, now that you're into it, and this is something you've got to schedule, do you have to pull yourself away? Or if you get into that mode where suddenly it's 3 a.m, will you stay there if it's all coming together?
Not since I retired, because I know I have time tomorrow. When I was working and I only had early in the morning and late at night to write, yeah, I would do that. I would spend the extra time. But as I said, I've been retired for a while, so I know tomorrow will come.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, cool. Yeah, because I mean, it's hard to balance that and then also switch gears brain-wise to go from mm-hmm. work and that kind of thing to, okay, now I'm going to do my creative side. And not like, how do you not have the creative thing that wheel just keep turning when you're doing other things? Like I'll sit and stew on an article for a month and it'll just be sitting there. And then I'm like, you better just write it. It'll just sit there and stew.
Oh, it goes away.
People are like, hey, what are you talking about? I'll answer a question with what I'm writing in my head. Yeah.
I think we all do that. As I said, you know, I kind of move in with my characters and I live there while during the time that I'm writing the book. So
yeah.
Wow.
They're as real to me as any actual people. Well, especially during the past year when the number of actual people I saw was not very many.
Yeah. Right. And now do you talk to your cats when you're writing? Do you assign them a character?
No. Mostly I yell at them to stop that, whatever they're doing that's annoying me.
Oh, there it is.
They want attention. There it is.
Okay.
I know. So any tips for someone getting started in writing? Doesn't matter what age or what they're doing, what would you say if they're going to get started writing?
I'm repeating what everybody always says, but it's just to write your story and worry about whether it's good, bad, or indifferent later. Mm. But who is it? Is it Sue Grafton who said you can't edit a blank page?
Right. Mm. Right. Yeah. That's really true. And then do you edit while you're writing or do you wait until the book is done to do editing?
Primarily, I wait until it's done, although with the most recent book, what I was doing was going back to what I had written the day before and reading through that and tweaking it a little, not making major changes.
Mm. Do you follow an outline or does the person who murders somebody else just kind of pop up during your writing? Like you might have a gardener and all of a sudden he looks like the person that could murder somebody. So he gets to be the murderer.
Most of the time I like to start out by knowing who the murderer is.
Okay.
And envisioning that last scene where the detective reveals who the murderer is, because that's what I'm writing toward on the whole book. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of outlining. Unfortunately, I usually get to the middle somewhere in my outline and then say, I can't wait anymore. I have to start writing this book. So, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I did have one book definitely where I got to the end and I had the wrong killer. So just turned out to be somebody else.
I'd start placing bets with myself. Okay, if you manage to keep the same killer, all right, I'll take myself out for dinner. Now, but then it's like, but that's part of creativity, you know, you're allowed to change. It's like you said, it's your story, your mm-hmm. creativity. You're allowed to do what you want. You're an adult, you know, it's like write what you want. The other thing too, is I know that in our correspondence, you were talking about your latest book and how you'd sent it to beta testers, which I think has got to be, you know, I wonder if they did that like 20, 30 years ago, having beta testers. Nowadays with the internet and email and Dropbox, it seems that it's easier. Or are the beta testers more of a group? How does that work?
That's two questions. And let me see. Some people did a similar thing. But generally, I think they operated more like critique groups where they would exchange pages. I'm pretty sure C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien exchanged pages as they were writing, because they were all part of the same group. The idea of beta readers per se, I think, is fairly recent, like you say, because it's been enabled by the internet. But again, you know, we've had critique groups forever, except those tend to be on a chapter by chapter basis. And I just think it's better to have readers look at the completed work. Because as I said, I had one book where the murderer changed. So if they had read all along the chapters that I was writing, something wouldn't gel when they got to the end, you know? So.
That's really cool to have the beta testers, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the critique groups. And well, the critique groups, well, are the beta testers mostly writers or readers?
No. They're the beta readers are readers. In fact, my current group is people that I got from my mailing list, from my newsletter. And I have one who has, she's beta read everything I've written, I think. And she is just phenomenal. And because we've had this long-term relationship, she's not afraid to tell me when things don't work. I mean, she was very critical of part of Trouble Tycoon. And she was right. When I looked at it, she was really right. So I did a lot of rewriting and added about 2,000 words or so to the story, wow. Maybe more, you know.
Yeah,
because she was right. It didn't work. So I really appreciate those readers who take the time and just basically out of the goodness of their hearts come back and give honest criticism.
Wow, that is cool. Yeah. I think having the reader is a really cool thing to do the beta testing. I think the writer's critique group is also neat because you can learn different techniques from each other when you're doing that and have that dialogue. But I wonder if there's thievery with those critique groups. You know,
I don't think there's thievery at all. I belong to too many critique groups. My problem with critique groups is that they think like writers, not like readers.
Okay.
And that tends to be, so they're too aware of how the sausage is made. And they're too focused on that as opposed to, does the story work?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like, okay, you're supposed to do this in grammar. Nah.
Exactly.
Somebody could like steal your novel within that group and then somebody gets murdered because of it. And
okay, go Nancy. Book. That's a good one. Murder in the critique
group.
For
sale.
Yeah,
you,
really.
You know?
Oh,
yeah,
that's
you're it. In a bookstore and find your book is already published under somebody else's name. Ew.
You never know, just like you said, Elise, you never know what can happen. You could never know. Well, it has been a pleasure having you on the show with us. And everyone, TucsonSistersInCrime.org, EliseMStone.com. Elise, tell everyone again the latest books, what they can go and get now. And is this Amazon the best place to get your book, or are they in local bookstores?
I am exclusive to Amazon. They have been in a local bookstore here in Tucson, but apparently with COVID, that's not worked out. So at this point, it is only Amazon where my books are available.
Okay. Mm. Okay. And so everyone get the shipwreck series, Shipwreck Point mystery series. It's out now. So how many again? Five, six books?
Five.
Five. Mm. Okay. Start with the Madam. And read all the way through to the tycoon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was fun.